Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seevilletomorrow.org.
On September 23, 2013, the Piedmont Group of the Sierra Club held a candidate forum for the 8 people seeking election to the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. The forum probed candidate positions on the U.S. 29 Western Bypass, the impacts of population growth, pollution from stormwater, and climate change. Questions were also submitted by the audience of about 50 people in Lane Auditorium at the Albemarle County Office Building. This recording by Charlottesville Tomorrow begins with moderator Jessica Gephardt, the political chair of the Piedmont Group of the Sierra Club.
All right. Good evening, and welcome to the Albemarle Board of Supervisors Candidates Forum on Environmental Issues. I'm Jessica Gephardt. I'm the political chair for the local Sierra Club, and tonight I will be the moderator for this forum. Tonight's forum has been organized by the Sierra Club in partnership with 350 Central Virginia, 350 UVA, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, Appalachian Voices, Better World Betty, Community Bikes, the EcoFair Committee, the Healthy Food Coalition, the League of Women Voters, Living Energy Farm, the Ravana Conservation Society, Slow Food at UVA, Transition Charlottesville Albemarle, and Virginia Organizing. So thank you to our co-sponsors. Tonight's forum is a nonpartisan event, and all announced candidates of the Board of Supervisors are participating tonight. The Board of Supervisors candidates are competing in the November 5th election, and they are Diantha McKeel and Philip Say for Jack Jewett, Brad Sheffield and Rodney Thomas for the Rio District, Liz Palmer and Dwayne Snow for Samuel Miller, and Cindy Burkett and Jane Dittmar for the Scottsville District. We have many candidates to hear from tonight, so we ask that you please hold your applause till the end and that there are no cheering or signs throughout the event. The Albemarle Board of Supervisors plays an important role in many environmental issues in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area, including land use, transportation, and sustainable living. We hope that tonight's forum presents a valuable opportunity for the candidates to share their positions and ideas on a range of environmental issues. We also hope that it gives the environmental community a chance to share with the candidates which issues are most important to them. Tonight's forum will begin with a 1.5-minute introduction from each candidate, followed by 4 questions submitted by the members of the co-sponsoring organizations. The candidates have been provided these questions in advance and will be allowed 1.5 minutes to respond. During the second portion of the forum, we'll be taking questions from the audience. Please write your questions on a note card and give them to Anne Marie or John, who are walking around out here, and they will select additional questions, and we'll get through as many of those as we can. Note cards and pens are located up here at the front, and they also can pass those out. Candidates will then be given 1 minute to respond to each of the audience questions. Finally, each candidate will have 1 minute for a conclusion. Our timekeeper, Stephen Johnson from Transition Charlottesville Albemarle, will hold up a yellow paper when there are 30 seconds remaining and a red paper when time is up. The forum should last just under 2 hours total. In addition to thanking all of our co-sponsors, the Sierra Club would like to thank the County Office Building for providing this venue, all of the candidates for their participation, and of course, all of you for being here tonight. So with that, we'll now begin with the introductions with Ms. Burkett, and we'll rotate the first speaker with each question.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank the Sierra Club for sponsoring this event tonight, and it is certainly my honor to be here. Like you said, my name is Cindy Burkett, and I have lived in Albemarle County since 1997. I've been married to the same guy for 36 years. We have a son, Brian, who went to Albemarle High School and went through the entire 4 years there. I have a bachelor's in law enforcement and corrections, from Penn State University. I have a master's in public administration from George Mason University. I've been chair or co-chair or president of several organizations here in Albemarle County, including the Newcomers Club of Greater Charlottesville, the Albemarle Charlottesville Republican Women's League, and the Albemarle County Republican Committee. I think that in order for a person to become a good candidate and then, of course, a good Board of Supervisor member, that that person needs to be able to work collaboratively. And that is something that I know that I bring to the table and that I value the beauty of Albemarle County and want to keep its pristine and beautiful nature.
Thank you. Ms. Dittmar.
Good evening. I'm Jane Dittmar, and I want to also thank the Sierra Club for sponsoring this. This is my very first ever in my whole life candidate forum, and I was very excited about coming tonight. I also want to thank the other candidates for all the efforts they're putting in. I had no idea what it took to do this, be a candidate, so I admire all of you for what you're doing. I have lived in this area for 35 years, 39 if you add the 4 years that I spent at the University of Virginia. I have my degree in economics. Unfortunately, the opportunities I had when I graduated were in urban areas, and I'd come to love this area. I love the rural nature. I love the civility, and I wanted to stay here, and I wanted to help keep it that way. I started a small business. I started other small businesses to employ myself and others, and I worked in the community and community service on nonprofit boards and on University of Virginia boards. Then I was asked to be president of the Chamber of Commerce. I served there for 9 years, and then I, 13 years ago, I trained as a professional mediator. I work in our court system, and I have a private practice. I'd like to bring to the board my deep understanding of the fabric of the community and my love of this place, my mediation skills, and my business sense, and I hope that some of that will resonate with you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel.
Good evening. I'm Diantha McKeel, and I'm definitely going to ask for a teleprompter for Christmas with all of these forms that we have going on. I've lived in Albemarle County and the Jack Jewett District for 37 years and have represented families on the school board for the last 16 years. Work of the school board and the Board of Supervisors is very similar. Budgets, transportation, and personnel. Along the way, I've participated in 51 joint school board and Board of Supervisor meetings regarding employee salaries, health care decisions, and capital improvement decisions and infrastructure. I have leadership experience in the public sector and believe decisions should be based on best practice, community involvement, good information, and solid data. During the time, I have discovered that successful organizations make decisions based best on addition and not division. I'm committed to finding ways to seek practical solutions and doing the people's business in a way that respects the process and differing opinions. Once elected, I will work hard to ensure that environmentally friendly practices and preserving our rural character and economic prosperity are not mutually exclusive. I will continue to support our educational system because it's a linchpin of our quality of life and the way to a prosperous economy. Since this is an environmental forum, I would like to offer up some changes recently made in Albemarle County Public Schools. I just have to do this. In the last 3 years,
thank you.
All right, I'm over. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Palmer.
Hi, my name is Liz Palmer, and I thank you all for having this forum, and I'm very happy to be here. Since it's an environmental forum, I thought I would concentrate on those issues, but I'm a veterinarian by profession. I've been a veterinarian for 32 years. I have my own small business, but I do have another life. And in the 90s, I became very involved in trying to protect the Mormons River, which is a water source for the urban area. It was being severely stressed by overwithdrawal. None of our raw water intakes had limitations on the quantity of water we were able to withdraw. The North Fork Ravano intake still does not. But the problem with the Mormons was made worse by poorly maintained infrastructure. To help solve this problem, I joined the League of Women Voters Natural Resource Committee, later became chair, and was appointed to the County Water Board in 2006, where I have concentrated on water pricing to help pay for needed infrastructure and the 50-year water supply plan. I was very much involved in getting the water supply plan through, which was, of course, supported by the city and the county, by the League of Women Voters, Ravana Conservation Society, SELC, PEC, TNC, and the business community. I was also the citizen rep on the Ravana River Basin Commission, represented the county water board on the South Fork Ravana Task Force, served several years on the board of the Ivy Creek Foundation, and have been active in local water issues. Thank you.
Mr. Say.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity for allowing me to be here. My name is Philip C., and I'm the independent candidate for the Jack Jewett District. I, like Ms. Dittmore, this is my first time at a forum, and actually this is my first time ever running for public office. A little bit about me. I'm a bachelor's in government and economics, my master's in sports psychology, and an ed specialist degree in administration and supervision from the University of Virginia. I have 28 years of public service in Virginia's state, county, and city governments as a law enforcement officer and as a probation counselor for the family court, as a teacher, administrator, coach in public and private schools, and since 2006 as the executive director slash director of the First Tee of Charlottesville, which is a public non-for-profit youth development organization. My campaign will focus on engaging and listening to the concerns of all Jewett residents and county residents, and taking those concerns to work with other supervisors and county personnel to promote good sense public policy that keeps what is good and to find effective ways to bring about positive and necessary change. Again, I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
Hopefully, if you're here, you know that I'm Brad Sheffield. I'm running for the seat in the Rio District. I'm actually very excited to be here and listen to the other Sanibin candidates speak tonight. And just a little bit about me. I've dedicated my professional career to actually serving Albemarle County. And I feel like I'm a very energetic family man who was raised here in Virginia. And I got my master's degree here at UVA in urban and environmental planning. And it's allowed me to spend the last 15 years working with planning commissions and elected officials, stakeholders, and public groups on transportation and land use type issues. So it's also allowed me to work throughout the Southeast on a variety of projects that I believe allow me to bring a lot of innovative and some really good ideas and solutions to the Board of Supervisors by understanding how some of our small individual decisions actually add up to our larger vision. So I hope you'll like what you hear this afternoon and this evening, and consider voting for me in November.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
I'd like to thank Dr. Gebhardt for moderating tonight and the Sierra Club and the other associates that helped put this on. As you know, my name is Dwayne Snow, and for the past 4 years, I have represented the Samuel Miller District on the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. My lifetime commitment to our community's natural resources and to preserving our rural areas is well known. I have brought to the board during the past 4 years a unique perspective to these areas. My 35 years experience as the former CEO of Snow's Garden Center has taught me how to combine the concerns and interest of our environmental and business community. Since I joined the board, we have placed over 7,555 acres in easements. Additionally, we have a very successful land tax credit program, which I strongly support. With the pending completion of the Ragged Mountain Dam, our water challenges will be handled for the next few generations to come. Earlier this year, I was able to work with homeowners in Redfield Subdivision to reach an agreement to move land that was scheduled for development into a potential easement area. Thank you for allowing me to be here this evening, and I look forward to answering your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
I'm Rodney Thomas. I'm a lifelong resident of Albemarle County, Charlottesville area. Along with Mr. Snow, as a matter of fact. I'm not going to tell you how many years, though, because you know how old I am. I graduated from Lane High School, which this is the Lane High School building, in 1962. I was drafted into the Army and with getting an honorable discharge in 67. In 1998, I was appointed to the Albemarle County Planning Commission. And that same year, I completed the Virginia Certified Planning Commissioner's program through Virginia Tech. While on the commission, I served CHART, MPO, Tech, that was, PAC, Tech, Eastern Initiative Committee, and numerous other, too many to name, committees. I am currently a member of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors in my fourth year representing the Rio District, and I'm very proud to represent the Rio District. And thank you all for coming tonight.
Thank you. And before we get started here with our first question, just as a reminder, if you came in late, the audience can submit questions by writing them on a note card. Anne-Marie and John back there have note cards and pens. So if you just maybe raise your hand, and then once you finish your question, you can either pass it to the end of the row or just hold it up in the air, and they'll come around and collect them. We'll need all of those questions in by the end of the second co-sponsor question. All right, so now for our first question from the co-sponsors. What is your stance on the construction of the Route 29 bypass, and how does it fit within your broader vision for transportation in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area? And we'll begin with Ms. Dittmar. You have one and a half minutes. Sorry.
One and a half, okay. I wanted to compliment whoever wrote this question. I think it's a very thoughtful way to ask a candidate about their position on the bypass and also to include the broader vision of what road and transportation should look like in our community. The way I look at the bypass is we have an artery going through the heart of our community that's clogged. And the doctor said you have two choices. You can build a bypass, or you can surgically bypass, or you can put stents right through the center. And for right now, the doctor has decided that we're going to do a bypass. So the real question is not are you for or against it, it's what would you do if the doctor wants a second opinion. If the doctor wants a second opinion, you have to look at the vitals again. Those include car counts at whatever time that would be. It includes the cost of construction at whatever time that would be. It includes the cost of any land acquisition that hasn't taken place. And those things would have to be looked at all over again. What's more important to people in my district are the clogged roads on 20 and 250. And they want to know why we can't get ahead of the curve on planning for roads or why we are having developments approved before we have the capacity to handle it. So my vision would be to try to get ahead of that curve. And my vision would be to look at other ways of doing these things so that in the future we are not 20 years behind in a plan. So I don't know what will happen. I don't know if the doctor's going to operate, but we'll look at that when we have to.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel, on the Route 29 bypass and how it fits within your broader vision for transportation.
Thank you. I'm opposed to the current design and location of the proposed bypass. All the reports from many studies stating that it is not cost-effective, nor will it solve our traffic congestion, have been reported and bannered about for way too many years. If the bypass is not built, echoing Jane's sentiments, we must definitely move the seven targeted neighborhoods out of the 25-year threat that they have lived under and determine a transportation plan that will work for our community. These neighborhoods have endured enough. Surrounding homes cannot be sold, and the VDOT-owned ones are in various states of disrepair. For our district, enough is enough. The traffic congestion we are experiencing is us. We need to integrate land use and transportation planning for our current situation and for the future. There are examples that we hear discussed. The adaptive transportation system, fix the Best Buy blockage and the Hourglass blockage on 29 North, as well as build parallel roads. What we are going to have to do as a community, though, is maximize our infrastructure that we've already paid for, as well as other modes of transportation, and figure out how to look ahead and determine a plan that will fit our situation now as well as in the future.
Thank you. Ms. Palmer, on the Route 29 bypass.
Okay. This road does not meet the desired goals of the community, which are to ease congestion on Route 29 for local citizens shopping in the corridor and for those passing through. With the Western Bypass, Route 29 will still continue to perform at a low level of service. I'm also particularly concerned about air pollution effects on our children because the bypass will run extremely close to six schools. If the bypass is not built, I would favor a plan that came out of years of work by a diverse coalition of Albemarle County citizens called Places 29. This is a doable and cost-effective plan made up of connector and parallel roads and alleviates congestion by improving the intersections at Rio and Hydraulic. VDOT participated in development of Places 29 and in the place of 29, a bypass was never recommended. Places 29 fits better into my broader vision of transportation in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area because it works better for car traffic, is more friendly for public transportation, bike, and pedestrian options. It is less damaging to the South Fork Ravanna Reservoir and costs less. I also have been intrigued for years by an idea to obtain the easements in the bypass right-of-way for a greenway to be used for bikes and pedestrians. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Seat, on the Route 29 bypass.
Well, as I understand it, this is a done deal, so we're going to go forward. And going forward, I would work to make sure that the impact of construction with regard to noise, air quality, water runoff, blast impacts, and other concerns by residents and businesses are addressed and not ignored. And we know how upset we get when government ignores us. With regard to future transportation, we have to decide, do we build sensible and needed roads to handle our traffic or continue to allow neighborhoods and side streets to pick up the slack, which add noise, fumes, and safety issues to our once quiet enjoyment?
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield, on the Route 29 bypass.
Well, being a transportation professional, this has definitely been a very, very interesting topic for me as I go door to door. I've definitely heard a lot of people talking about this, and without a doubt, our transportation issues come up quite a bit. For me, I'm hearing from the public that they're desperate for some sort of transportation improvement. That's what they're looking for. And so my position on the bypass is fairly unique in that I take into account my planning background. While I don't agree with the way this was brought forward and decided on, I would have to agree with Philip in that we're moving forward with this and we need to prepare. But I believe we need to prepare for two different likely scenarios. One is that if it does get built, and there's still a lot of work that's got to be done to make this a functional road to interact with the transportation system that we have now and to mitigate the negative impacts that are going to come from the bypass being built. But when it's not built, the other scenario is that the public's going to still want a transportation improvement. So the Board of Supervisors has got to be ready to give them something tangible, something that they can actually accept as an alternative to the bypass. So that means, in a broader vision, is that no matter what kind of transportation changes we see, we always have to make sure that we're adapting and preparing and meeting those expectations of the public.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
It was mentioned just a few minutes ago about the importance of Places 29, and I ran on that platform, 4 years ago. There were four things that we were looking for. We were looking for the Hillsdale Connector. We were looking for a second ramp on the bypass. We were looking for a widening of 29. And we were looking for the Berkmeyer extension to provide those parallel roads and things that we've been talking about. And remember, we've been talking about these things for about 30 years. And so early in the second year that I was on the board, I received a call from Secretary Connaughton. And he asked Rodney and I if we would support a bypass. And we said, well, we've got a platform, or we've got something that everyone in the community has bought into, and that's the Places 29 improvements. And we went over those. And he said, well, if you could get us those, would you support a bypass? Yes. So all of those items, the Places 29 items, are on the drawing board. They're in the TIP, the six-year plan, and the money is being allocated for the funding of all of those. So I fully support it, and I also get the roads that we need with Places 29, and I fully support multimodal transportation, bikes, and other
Thank
items.
You. Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Well, I would imagine that everyone in this auditorium knows my stance on the US 29 bypass. I would rather change the name to an internal road. It's not really a bypass. It's not the perfect road, but it's what the state had $244.5 million in the bank to pay for. We asked for extensions on it to make it longer. We asked for interchanges to make it more operable. But that was it. The plan is the plan. I still call it an internal road because of the way it is. When I was running for office in 2009, all of my printed material stated me as supporting the U.S. 29 Western Bypass. It also stated that I would move forward improving transportation alternatives in Albemarle County. I have not wavered from these improvements and still support all of the improvements that I have already mentioned, but we still need to look at more. This is not the perfect road. My broader vision of for transportation in Albemarle County is taken from the long-range transportation plan, which is suggested by the MPO to widen 250-29 bypass from Barracks Road to Interstate. And we, the MPO, have talked about adding one lane to the east and west lanes from Chadwell to the U.S. 29 intersection of 64. We have also talked about east of
Thank
Bradley
you.
River.
Ms. Burkett.
Thank you.
I do support the construction of the bypass. This is a road that needs to be built. This is the beginning effort to reduce traffic congestion and address the accident rate on our county's part of the 29 corridor. Furthermore, as talked about before, this transportation project includes other necessary work like the Hillsdale Drive, the widening of 29, and the Best Buy ramp. This bypass has been voted on and approved by the county board, approved by VDOT, and it would be a great disappointment to the majority of Albemarle residents if this road and the funding that goes with it would be unrealized.
Thank you. Now, before we move on to our second question from the co-sponsors, please make sure that you turn in all of your audience questions by the end of this so that our question takers can sort those questions. Thank you. Our second question is, many people in our community believe that rapid population growth will deplete the vital natural resources and degrade the aesthetics of Albemarle's rural areas. What solutions would you suggest to address these issues? And we will begin with Ms. McKeel.
We need policies that guide new development into our growth areas. That keeps our taxes down as fewer services are required. Studies show that high-density areas, though, impact natural resources at a higher level, for example, stream quality. Therefore, we must support and combine infrastructure improvements and environmental practices that allow for a high quality of life in the growth areas. Otherwise, families are just going to be pushed into the rural areas. Strive for growth that is sustainable by supporting the types of businesses that not only create high-paying jobs, but also provide jobs for existing residents. We need to ramp up our local workforce, retraining and development using many tools, including educational options such as KTEC and PBCC. Population does matter, and it strains resources. We have to be mindful and focus on quality of life for our community, our current residents. We need to understand the effects of population on the environment and quality of life. And we need to remember that planning for growth does not create growth.
Thank you. Ms. Palmer, on population growth in rural areas.
I've heard that there are two things people hate, density and sprawl. Both have their environmental costs, but it's generally more cost-effective to protect natural resources by concentrating growth in the growth areas. And, of course, there's a trend for people moving into cities. So it matters where growth takes place. I believe we have to encourage people to live in the urban areas by making them more attractive with green corridors, better transportation options, job opportunities, and the needed infrastructure to support the population. We also must work to monetize the environmental impacts of population growth in an effort to make growth pay for itself as much as possible. This is what we on the County Water Board have already done with our connection fees. For county government, this can take the form of proffers, a comprehensive stormwater management plan for the urban area, or other ideas from the community, and I'm very open to hearing those ideas. I'm committed to keeping the rural areas rural. Those living in the rural areas in my district have clearly articulated their desire to maintain their rural lifestyle for their quality of life and for protection of natural resources. For these reasons, I support hard edges to our current development areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. C.
Yes, thank you. Well, just as many folks believe the statement that you read to the question, there are many that disagree. 5% of our 736 square miles is designated for growth, and the rest is rural. Balancing property owners' rights with regard to develop or not develop land requires discussion and thought on the intended and unintended impacts to the land, air, noise, water, and neighbors. We got to work together here. We really do. I will support in keeping the ACE program, which, as you know, does protect large tracts of land with the landowners with a tax incentive. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
Well, one of the ideas that I have regarding this is that I believe we need to kind of reassess basically how we've grown over the last 10 years and kind of reinvest in the growth area. Yeah, I look around the Ryer District specifically, and there's a lot of vacant storefronts and a lot of just vacant land. And I think we need to take a step back and figure out how we can incentivize redevelopment and infill and encourage using the existing infrastructure and resources that we have in place now. And basically take a look at how we can help the businesses that are already there, help them, you know, succeed and prosper, and how we can try to help them improve the neighborhoods that are there. Because our growth has really had a negative impact on a lot of the neighborhoods that are out there. Commonwealth Drive, Northfield, Huntington, they're all experiencing a lot of traffic issues because of that growth. And I think that if we take that step back and we figure out how we can make those improvements, then we're kind of learning from the errors that we've had in the past. And so moving forward, I think we can do a better job.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
First of all, the question seems to indicate that we have a rapid growth problem in this area. Our area is actually growing at the rate of 1.2% a year, with 71% of that is moving in population, and 29% is natural growth from our children and grandchildren and things such as that. Right now, 35 square miles houses 53% of our population. And as it's already been pointed out, that's the area where we need the additional side roads to help move traffic through the area, and that's why the roads are so important. 47% of our population lives in the rural areas, which is 690 square miles. And I took a pledge 4 years ago that I wanted to make sure that we kept our rural areas rural, 95% of that area, and the 5% that is designated urban, rural urban area, that we would work to maintain that. We can do that by continuing to support designated growth areas, discourage rural development, growth management, planning, transportation, public facilities and utilities, and through the ACE program and other programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you. Our rural areas are a great asset to the citizens of Albemarle County. We have conservation easements along with the ACE program. And I was on the commission when the first ACE program piece of property was bought, and it was Jimmy Powell out at North Garden. And he's still farming on that piece of property. Both of these programs protect our rural areas along with protecting the county's open space. We also have ag forest districts, which I serve on that committee, which protect our open space and rural areas. The growth area is also keeping a large part of the growth in the 5%, as the other ones have said, of our 350 square miles of county acreage, rather than the growth going into our rural area. I want to protect our rural areas by locating all or as much as we can possibly put into the growth areas.
Thank you. Ms. Burkett.
Okay. Well, honestly, I think that the county's current rate of growth is in keeping with a growth rate that is sustainable for the foreseeable future. I think that the current 95% rural and 5% growth rate designation should be adhered to as closely as possible. I really do feel that it is a balance of growth and protecting our environment that our county will remain a healthy, vibrant place to live. Albemarle County is one of the most beautiful counties in the world, and I can't think that there'd be anybody on this board who wouldn't do whatever it took to protect it.
Thank you. Ms. Dittmar.
I'll echo some of the other comments, Diantha in particular. I absolutely believe in a designated growth area. I believe that rural integrity and protection are compatible with a vibrant economy in the growth area. I absolutely, if I'm elected, will protect the rural areas, not only because that's my own personal value, but I'm hearing about it throughout my district. I would like to enhance the question a little bit and say that it goes beyond the denigration of our aesthetics or the depletion of our natural resources, and I came up with a few other strong reasons that we must do this. First of all, the new air standard quality standards that we have to adhere to have us on a watch list now. And if we cross that threshold and we are not in compliance, we will have new gas regulations here, and our employers will have new regulations. Our wide open spaces, our meadows, and our forests help bring those emissions from the growth area down. Big reason to protect the rural area. Another is to keep the stress on our first responders to a minimum. It takes a long time to get to people in emergency in the rural areas. If we keep people that have those needs in the growth area, it's easier to serve them. And finally, back to roads. Our country roads are not built to have increased population traveling on them, and we don't have any money to enhance them.
All right. At this time, please make sure that any questions that the audience would like to submit are into our two volunteers here. And we'll move on to our third question from the co-sponsors. Pollution caused by rainwater runoff is a serious problem in Albemarle County. What will you do to address this problem, and how will you pay for stormwater controls? We'll begin with Ms. Palmer.
Federal regs addressing runoff were passed in 1987. We were not required to address these mandates at that time. The next came state regs, followed by comprehensive regulations to clean up the bay. So the county has two issues: complying with state-mandated water program, which concentrates on urban runoff, and implementing a plan to reduce the amount of pollutants and sediment going into our local waterways. Unlike the city, where they own their stormwater infrastructure, the county only owns a portion of its infrastructure. Parts are owned by VDOT, and others are privately owned by neighborhood associations, churches, and schools. So funding to address this problem won't look the same as the stormwater utility fee in the city. We do still have a significant cost associated with meeting our goals, but we must engage multiple entities to address this problem. I will take a leadership role in building a comprehensive strategy to solve this problem, whether we have a dedicated funding source in the tax base or it comes in the form of a stormwater utility. For the rural areas, we have a lot of streams that have minor impairments. It's more cost-effective to keep these streams from deteriorating further. We must engage landowners in solving this problem. A focus of my term will be keeping what is clean, clean. It's cheaper, smarter, and easier to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. C, on stormwater and how to pay for stormwater upgrades.
Thank you. As I understand it, there's a high percentage of our streams that are contributing to this. And as you pointed out, very soon mandates from the federal and state agencies will hopefully provide directives on how the county is to deal with this. As we prepare for these directives, I would encourage landowners to determine and identify if they are contributing to this problem and take steps to correct, because these changes are coming. It goes back to being a good neighbor and paying attention to how our ripples, no pun intended, when you toss a rock into the water, you see the ripples that go out, how those ripples affect us environmentally further downstream and with our immediate area. As far as funding, I'm still playing with that, but it definitely needs to be a discussion by all of the stakeholders. How are we going to fix this? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield, on rainwater or stormwater runoff and paying for stormwater controls.
Well, about a year and a half ago, I pretty much immersed myself into this issue because at Jaunt, we were building a new parking lot. And with the looming fees, we actually chose to do a permeable surface type parking lot. Went to a lot of meetings from the city, really understood how they were evolving with their city fee. But as I agree with, I think, just about everybody probably up here, the approach the city's taking is probably not going to work best for the county. The city took a very education-type approach. We looked at, you know, they looked at ways of telling people ways they can mitigate their impacts. But at the end of the day, the infrastructure has to be paid for. And that's the problem that we face. For the county, the problem gets even more difficult because we have the growth area, multi-level dwellings, all the way out to 200-acre land lots. And you can't have one solution for all of that. The problems range across that type of development density. And so I think there's going to be a lot of discussion still ahead of us. I think there's still going to be a lot of public feedback. And I think, you know, it's going to be an interesting discussion, but I think we just need people that we can really identify what needs to be replaced, what investments need to be made now, and what that's going to cost us so that we can get ahead of this problem before we're faced with a bill that's difficult to pay.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
Thank you. I've always been working to maintain our streams and to help protect our area from runoff. You know, it's runoff has always been a problem. And as a county, we are doing, I think, an excellent job at preventing and controlling runoff in the various areas. And we have a lot of safeguards in place. However, the rules continue to be changed and things continue to be ramped up. We have a new set of guidelines coming down the road that are going to be a lot more stringent than anything that we've had in the past. I was at a VACO conference here about 4 weeks ago, and I asked them, when are we going to have the actual rules and guidelines that we're going to have to be abiding by? And they said, well, they're coming. So for right now, we don't know exactly what all is coming. We don't know exactly what it's going to cost. But I personally believe, as has been stated by others, that we will not have a rain tax in our county, and that through working on stream buffers and the other things that we need to work on, and we'll be ready for it. Right now, we are ahead of the curve and ahead of most localities, and we will continue to do so.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you. I'll start off by saying Albemarle County is way ahead of the curve, like Mr. Snow says. We also have increased the stream buffers from 50 to 100 feet, which is helping a whole lot. And in that 100 feet, you have to have a buffer of trees and plants planted before the water goes to the creek or the river. We have been adding storm water control systems for years. I guess they really got cranked up when I was on the commission, probably in, I'd say, 98, when I first got on there. We were installing them on Hydraulic Road, El Prio Road, and it's helped an awful lot to put the water back where it really needs to be. And now we have to contend with paying for, it's TMDLs is what it's called. This is the fees that we're working towards to get our water levels and our water drainage up to par with what the state requires. It's a regulatory term in the U.S. Clean Water Act, describing a value of the maximum amount of pollutant that a body of water can receive while still meeting water quality standards. Alternatively, TMDL is the allocation of that water pollutant deemed acceptable to the subject receiving waters. This is used by the U.S. United States EPA. This is a pig and a poke, and I've said that since it was put before us probably 2 years ago.
Thank you. Ms. Burkett.
I honestly do not like it when the state or federal government determine policy for local governments through unfunded mandates. However, because I personally think that local governments pretty much know what they actually need to do with some, parameters. However, this is a matter that the county will be dealing with in the very near future. With unfunded mandates from both the state and federal government to deal with stormwater management, all communities throughout the United States will be dealing with this costly issue. The county must submit a stormwater management plan to the state by December 15th of this year. All the information that is needed to make the important decisions is a matter that is still being researched. As a board member, I will be researching and learning as much as I can possibly learn, depending on the county staff to help in that regard. There are many facets of this issue that will need to be explored, from how to determine the amount of stormwater runoff that is actually being produced to how to fund such a mandate. Funding solutions could include using general fund revenue, using some type of special assessment against benefited properties, or by using a stormwater utility fee. Fees are generally based on the amount of impervious services. I will do the hard work necessary to come up with a stormwater management plan that works best for Albemarle County. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Dittmar.
I first became aware of the Chesapeake Bay Act and what the meaning of that was to us as citizens here in Albemarle County when I was working on the, or participating on the League of Women Voters Natural Resource Committee. We were working towards a water plan for the community, and we had a plan that was developed by the Nature Conservancy and supported by the Piedmont Environmental Council and the Southern Environmental Law Center, and was supported by the business community. And it was a beautiful thing for me to see how much we all have in common rather than any differences in that whole group of people trying to forward that. Back to the Act, learning about it then, I realized what was looming and that I should just as a citizen find out more about it, which I did. And I watched with great interest how the city grappled with this, how they dealt with impervious formulas, and how they dealt with the funding formula. And as somebody else said, I think it might have been Brad, we have a complicated situation here. We have an urban area with those impervious surfaces, and then we have a rural area, and you can't treat them the same. So my MO normally when I'm trying to speed up on a learning curve is to see how other people are doing it. And we have other counties here in the Commonwealth that have similar situations. Looking at what they're doing and the models they're proposing and the funding formulas and the creative ideas they have would be the first step. The second step would probably be hybriding it specifically for our community.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel.
One of the things that I think when we talk about our water, we really should celebrate the fact that we are our own watershed and we have control and of our water quality, and that's really something that is a blessing. We can and we certainly should clean up our rivers and our streams, and that just helps clean up the Chesapeake Bay, and I think it sounds like we all agree that all of those things are great things to work on. There is a mandated requirement by July 14. Like I think most people up here have said, there's just not enough information at this time. My model, as Jane indicated, is to see what best practices there are in other places. So I would be looking for staff, for myself, for the community to go out and investigate what other communities are doing and then tailor it to our situation. I also think that sometimes we don't utilize all the minds that we have at the University of Virginia either. There are lots and lots of folks at the University of Virginia that have great expertise in environmental issues, as well as our community organizations in town, and I think we should bring people together and figure this out in a way that that works for all of our areas in the county.
Thank you. Our final question from the co-sponsoring organizations is, climate change is a topic being discussed at the international and national level, but not so much at the community level. Since the implications of climate change will be felt in our communities, what will you do to bring this issue to the attention of the Board of Supervisors and the public at large? And we'll begin with Ms. Palmer.
Oh, no. She's the last one.
Oh. All right. We'll begin with Mr. C.
Okay, one of the more striking images I've ever seen was a picture taken by one of the shuttle missions of the hole in the ozone. How many of y'all have seen that? It's there. As far as climate change, I will be a voice that says from time to time and a lot more from time to time, hey, let's look at this, let's be aware. Let's talk about this. Let's talk with the experts. Let's talk to the folks at UVA. Let's talk to our county staff. Let's be aware of this. We have to keep this conversation alive, and it has to stay relevant. Now, there's a lot of folks out there that believe it doesn't exist. That's fine. But there's just as many that do and just as much information that says it does. So we have to be prepared, and we have to continue to talk about it. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
Well, I think the county does a great job at really taking a look at this as far as from a internal way. And what I mean is that, you know, climate change is here. You know, we definitely, it's a reality. And what we need to do to make the adjustments to our power consumption, our greenhouse gas emissions, those kind of things, we all have to do. But the county has taken a lot of proactive steps. But what I think it hasn't done, and it's given a lot of almost lip service to it, is that it hasn't taken a lot of leadership roles out into the community. The county is almost the icon for what could be done. And if the county can do it, then I think businesses and residents can do it. And I think we can take that to the level of showing them the economic benefits of reducing energy consumption and just educating the public. And one great way of doing that is the Better Business Challenge, participating as a full partner in that. This is the second year that it's going on. At Jaunt, we participated the first year. It was great. You hear a lot of great ideas. And I think taking those kind of initiatives and taking that kind of leadership really helps get the message out to the businesses and to the public.
Thanks. Thank you. Mr. Snow.
I've heard a lot of debate over whether the climate is changing or whether it's not. This last summer, it was one of the coolest and wettest summers that I can remember in 65 years. So whether it's happening or not, I cannot answer for sure. But I can tell you this. Regardless, we have a responsibility, and that responsibility would not change whether it was happening or not, to be good stewards of our environment. And the things that we can do is, as we've already pointed out in one of the previous questions, is to make sure that we're protecting our streams, making sure our water quality is maintained, planting additional trees and shrubs and things such as that, which is something I've been doing for a long time. In fact, in the Philippines, Rena and I help plant trees along the national highway in the Philippines. We need to be good stewards of our environment, regardless of what the weather's doing.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Yes. Since I've been on the Board of Supervisors, Alamar County has, I know they've gotten two plaques. This is a green building right here. If you notice on the side of the wall as you came into the parking lot, there is a plaque on that wall. So Alamar County is working on that. The Fifth Street building also has a plaque on it, and that was put on there about 2.5 years ago. So Alamar County is doing the right things, but I agree with Brad. We might want to get out into the public a whole lot more. I believe climate change is something that we all need to be more aware of. Recently, it was announced a discovery of 1 million square miles of added polar ice. I don't know really what that means. If the climate change discussed at the international and national levels are continuing to be a concern, I hope that we get all the facts. Then we would push even more and harder than we are doing right now. Continue our best use of resources.
Thank you. Ms. Burkett.
I think that it is prudent for any community to be ready for any weather-related disaster. I also think that we do and should continue to support initiatives that will promote keeping our environment pristine. As you all are aware, that is done by the work of groups like the Sierra Club, working with county government and other organizations to keep environmental concern and its well-being at the forefront of the minds of all of our citizens. However, I am not certain that climate change policy is something that local governments are in a position to make. There is still not 100% agreement in the scientific community about the extent of human involvement, and I think our time would be better spent concentrating on issues at the local level.
All right, Ms. Dittmar.
Rounding up the end here, I liked this question. It was kind of a think globally, act locally. And so I thought, well, what can I do personally? And then I thought, no, I think this forum is about what would I do as a supervisor. So I looked at some of the things that we've heard about. I've also looked at our comp plan, which is in final work process of being adopted. It won't be adopted before the election, so I'll probably be working on it pretty hard if I'm elected. There are a couple things in there that talk about the values of the county and how it might address this era of climate change. The first one that caught my attention was the emphasis on planned urban development, which again relates to protecting the rural area and having growth happen where in the designated growth area. The second, and that was mentioned by Rodney, about the county office buildings, but we can encourage, incent, and educate about energy-efficient building. And we can also help. We've got some tired buildings out there, 40 years or more old, and they can be renovated with some energy-efficient products and systems. And we can create incentives to do that, if not just education. And finally, our bikeways and public transportation. We've got a portion of my district that could really use public transportation. So I really want to work on that, and that certainly would help with emission and use of those helping the environment as far as this issue. Yeah.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel.
Scientists seem to be agreeing that the climate is changing, and certainly everyone in this community wants what's best for our community. As a nurse and a researcher, I want to make decisions based on timely information, data, and best practice. More information is better than less. And one of the things that I think we should do is start to benchmark ourselves against other communities, availing ourselves of expertise within our community, including, again, UVA. Just this morning, there was an article in the Daily Progress discussing climate change and the increase in people suffering from allergies. And it quoted biologists from UVA, VCU, and New Mexico State University. Certainly, in my day job at the University Medical Center, I see this increase play out in our clinics at UVA and in our local schools as well. So I think we need, as a board, to take a leadership role, begin conversations with our community around the concerns, the implications, and start to figure out, as a community, how we're going to deal with and address this to be prepared.
Thank you. And now Ms. Palmer.
Last week, Gina McCarthy, the head of the EPA, said climate change caused by carbon pollution is one of the most significant public health threats of our time. The effects of global climate change are and will increasingly be felt on the local level. We must be proactive and develop comprehensive strategies so we are ready for whatever comes our way. I have already started working developing a science advisory committee made up of science professionals to think more broadly about the issue and identify where this community is lacking in both mitigation efforts and preparedness. I will also be looking at public outreach. The county has a local climate strategy that was developed after we pulled out of cool counties in 2011, but I believe it must be expanded in scope. We also must expand our support of existing programs which do public outreach and education on energy efficiency, such as the Local Energy Alliance Program, LEAP. I agree with Brad that we really need to take a leadership role in this. It's an extremely important issue. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll now move on to the questions from the audience. The candidates will be allowed only 1 minute per question for the audience questions. And it looks like we're a little bit ahead of schedule, so we might get an extra one or two in. So, all right, for the first question, how do you think our county can engage in responsible solid waste planning, including true recycling and food waste diversion from landfills? And we'll begin with Mr. Sheffield.
For a while, I did live in the city, which was really interesting because the incentive that you had for recycling was a financial one. You paid to have your trash picked up, or you recycled everything you possibly could, and it was picked up for free. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think we all have, you know, carrots and sticks that drive us in certain directions. And I think when we look at a solid waste discussion, we need to look at how we are incentivizing and allowing for our residents to be separating their own trash and recycling. And having, I think, more convenient locations and more convenient access is an important part of the discussion.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
This is something I feel very strongly about. You know, for years we've only had one real area that we took our solid waste to, and that was the Ivy landfill. However, if you're in the northern part of our county, it would take you probably close to 30 to 40 minutes to get there. If you were in the far southern part of our county, it might take you another 30 to 40 minutes. So it has not been really convenient to our citizens at all. I've been strongly in support and have been pushing this for the last 2 years that we close the rural area, the Ivy landfill, and have 3 to 4 smaller areas, satellites areas that would be convenient to each segment of our county.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas, on solid waste planning and recycling.
Elmore County is, we've been having discussions probably 2 years maybe on privatizing. The city of Charlottesville already dropped out of the landfill, so we're kind of in it all by ourselves. So we have been discussing it for financial reasons. And I agree with Mr. Snow, put the convenient pickup places around the county. We talked about three. It may take more than that. But it's going to be some people in the county that are going to be so far out, they'll have to drive for 20, 30 minutes to get to the centers. But I think it'll all work out.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Burkett?
Well, I'm a real fan of single-stream trash pickup. Where we live, Dixon Trash, and it does make a huge difference in how you think about recycling, because I know that when it first took over, I kept wondering to myself if they were going to do it right. So I was hesitant, actually, to put all my trash in one bag. But I am convinced that that is an excellent way to do that. However, I do think we need countywide refuge centers for folks. I know that when I was doing the Scottsville district, doing door-to-door, talking to some folks, one of the things that they mentioned was the number of tires that they found in the waterways. And it's because it's really difficult for folks to get to refuge centers. So we need to make sure that they're someplace where people can get to them.
Thank you. Ms. Dittmar.
Well, I think three areas, and others have already picked up on them, but I'll synthesize them for my comments. The first is convenience. If it is inconvenient to recycle, then people are going to find ways to do it differently. Even if they are well-intentioned, we have a lot of time issues. People are very busy, so we want to make it easy and efficient. The second is incentives. I think that when we're trying to change behavior, I prefer carrots than sticks, and I think we should look at the opportunities we have there. The third is it distresses me that we do things jurisdiction by jurisdiction. I think trash is a regional issue, and I think we should have a coalition of partners that are working on this. And finally, education. And I'm not sure that single stream is actually getting us where we want to go. I think that I'm learning a lot about this. I think that we have to be very careful when we call that complete recycling and then feel good about it when we go to sleep at night.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel.
I have to agree with Jane on this one. Single stream recycling is really worrying me a lot. And I'd like to investigate that whole process a little bit more. I do think that we have to make somehow or another figure out how we handle the rural areas versus the urban areas. And as the chair of a 16-year Adopt-a-Highway committee, I can tell you that we do need to address this issue, because folks are using our roadways and areas as ways to get rid of their trash, and sometimes it's actually shocking and appalling what you find. So I would be very seriously interested in looking at the situation.
Thank you. Ms. Palmer.
I think that solid waste is a core service of government. I think it's extremely important that we provide this to the community. It's more than just convenience centers, though. It's dealing with hazardous waste. It's dealing with bulk items. And it does have to be convenient. There has to be several of them. I myself live on one of those roads that ends up with mattresses and couches and tires. And I have always, done the bulk days at the Ivy landfill. But anyway, I do believe the most important thing is it is a core service of government to provide those services. And we have to figure out a comprehensive way to do that. I'm not a fan of single stream recycling. And I do also believe that we need to look at regional options as well as county options. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. C.
I couldn't have said it any better. Thank you. But I want to add one thing to that. The county has to demonstrate and encourage and take responsibility to do this and a greater role with our students and our adults. So we can, again, take the leadership role in this. It is doing the right thing.
Thank you. Now for our next question from the audience. This is a little long. It extends onto another note card. All right. I have heard right here at the Board of Supervisor meeting in regard to development that why should a supervisor vote for or against something when he or she doesn't see hundreds of people protesting against it? Is that the threshold of good decision making? Even if people are against it, the Board of Supervisor votes for it. Is there a way you would take steps for a greater direct role of citizens in making decisions that affect them?
Thank you.
And we'll start with Mr. Snow.
You know, there are several things that go into helping you to make a decision for your vote. Number one, there are a lot of times quite a few people here voicing their opinion, but there's 100,000 people that live in this county, and so if we have 200 people here, that's still a small majority of our county, but their input is important. We also get literally hundreds of emails every day regarding different issues, and so you take those into account. Then you go out and visit the area and look at the facts, and then when you take all of these different opinions, all of these different thoughts, and make a decision that you think is right for the entire community. And so everyone's input is important, and that's usually how we go about making a decision.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas, on allowing for a greater direct role of citizens.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it and different things that have gone on in Albemarle County in the last couple of years. We've used polls on certain things. One particular poll is how I made my decision, and it was 70.3 pro. And then in right now in my district, and that's on the bypass specifically, and I think that's what the question was leading to. The other one, the Rio district right now, it's 56% pro, 31% anti, and that's how I make my decisions. And in doing something in Albemarle County, plus visit every site.
All right, thank you, Ms. Burkett, on allowing for a greater role of citizens in decision making.
Well, it's interesting, but that's probably the main thing that a board of supervisors should do is to listen to the constituents that come to them. Having 200 people in a room or 100 people in a room, absolutely you need to listen to that, but it cannot be your decision on a subject or an issue can't be based on the squeaky wheel. It needs to be based on a comprehensive view of the entire issue that's coming up, and you have to do your homework and work hard to make sure that you have made all available to everybody that has any skin in the game, so to speak. And that is what I would do. You need to sometimes seek these folks out, make sure that you're representing everybody in your district or in the entire county.
Thank you. Ms. Dittmar.
I used to be the person that rushed in at the very end, the night of the vote, to explain how I felt about things. And finally it dawned on me, this was fortunately a number of years ago, that was the last minute, and that what citizen involvement is all about is hearing about it early enough that if you care about it, you'll get involved. So I guess ultimately I would have to make a decision as a supervisor. That's what we're asked to do. But way before that, for the people that are interested in it, whether it's a project in their neighborhood, a road improvement, you want to get the word out. We have new technologies now that are amazing. I have teenagers. I have children in college. The way we can communicate now has completely changed. We can let people know what's going on early. If they care, they can be involved. We can set up commissions, citizen commissions, to help us study things. The very last minute, the people rushing in at the end must be respected and listened to, but that is at the tail end of decision making.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel.
It's sometimes very hard to make sure that everyone in your district or in the county is aware of an issue, but it really is worthy of really trying very hard to get messages out. I think Jane's right now communication has improved to the point where it is much easier with email and even social media. I think it's also important that the Board of Supervisors respect the process and keep the process the integrity of the process so that the community understands how things are going to go through a decision-making process. I think it's also important that we try different modes. I know I've had a lot of success with teletown hall, the phone outreach to folks. So you can use different ways to get to your community members besides just waiting for them to come to us. But in the long run, it is a two-way process.
Ms. Palmer.
Well, I've been a person in the audience listening a lot over the years, and I have said before that if I get elected, I will never forget what it feels like to be sitting in that audience. I'm going to listen to people. I'm hoping that people will give me their email addresses and that I can send out a newsletter. I've never been a Facebook person until this election, but now I am, so I'm going to keep it up. And I do have been asking people to please help me once I get elected. Let's form some committees. Let's have groups of people advising the board and having more involvement. So that's what I plan to do, is to really reach out for that involvement. And I agree with Diantha about the process. That's extremely important. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. C.
So I can't say what everybody else said. Now, this has always been a concern of mine. Can you imagine, as a government teacher, you remember what it was like when you took government, or as an eighth grade civics teacher, trying to get, to convey the message to the students of how they could be involved. So I believe as an elected official, I work for them. And I'm going back to that concept. I work for you. You do pay my salary. And I'm going to listen to your voice, whether it's more opportunities by way of town hall meetings, especially in places that normally town hall meetings aren't held, whether it's e-blast. I'm getting into Facebook, too. So there are ways that we can get more people involved and to listen to what our constituents say and make decisions based on what they want.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
Now I know how it feels to be the last one to talk on an issue, because it feels like it's been answered quite a bit. But it is pretty hard to get a comprehensive input on any issue. And even things like phone poles are getting antiquated. For me, example, I don't have a landline, so I never get surveyed. So it's really hard to reach out. But during my time when I was consulting, I was the team that was brought in to take the brunt of the public's input. And during that time, I learned a lot of lessons about how to proactively reach out into the community. And instead of taking a kind of present and defend approach, we started taking more of those listening approaches and the informal forum ways. And I would have to say that Albemarle County prides itself on being innovative and taking the next step above the rest. And I think that's something that we should embrace and try to find innovative ways that we can listen to the public and get all the input that we need to get.
Thank you. Now for our third question from the audience, and we'll begin with Mr. Thomas. Could you speak about the Ravanna River as a priority in your agenda as a member of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors?
That's a really good question. After being raised here, I played in the Ravanna River when I was a kid, and I have worked with numerous, well, the RBC, to protect all of our waterways around here. I adore clean water. When I grew up in Belmont, I watched Morse Creek die, almost dead. It has a few things in it now. Then we moved down to the north side. I watched Meadow Creek totally die, and now it's getting some bug life back in it. But the Ravanna River is a very important waterway in Albemarle County, not just Albemarle County, but it goes into the James, and so therefore we need to protect all those waterways coming from the mountain, coming from the sponge, coming from our watershed, which goes into the Ravanna River. The Ravanna River is the most important part of my life, actually.
Thank you. Ms. Burkett.
The Ravanna River and the James River are our Chesapeake. And so we need to look at these waterways just as you would for managing them, making sure that they continue to be pristine and that we buffer the waterways around them, creeks that lead into them, because they are the life of the waterways in our county. So the Ravana would play a huge part in any planning that we do for keeping environmental concerns at the forefront.
Thank you. Ms. Dittmar.
I mentioned earlier that I worked on the Natural Resource Committee of the League of Women Voters on the water plan, and a part of the reason why I really liked the water plan that we ended up adopting had less to do with water storage, although that was very important. It was what we did for two major streams, rivers that support our aquifers and our life here. And so I think that we need to always be aware of what we're doing when we're diverting water. That needs to be watched. I think we need to look at the fencing for our farm animals because that has to do with water quality. And I think that we need to make sure that our parks and those areas that are available to open it up to citizens to enjoy remain safe and also accessible.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel.
Just this last Sunday at my church, we had a celebration of water. And it's one of my favorite church services every year. And folks bring in containers of water from various places that they found to be special. And they discuss the meaning of that water and that place for them. And it was really touching this last Sunday because one of the ladies spoke eloquently about how much the Ravana meant to her. And I wish I could speak as eloquently as she did. But certainly our waterways are a blessing for us, the Ravana, all of our streams and rivers, and we need to make sure that we take care of them. We have that responsibility for not only ourselves, but for our future generations here.
Thank you. Ms. Palmer.
Could you do me a favor? Could you just repeat the question one more time?
Yeah, of course. Could you speak about the Ravana River as a priority in your agenda as a member of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors?
Okay. Well, I believe that we have to take a watershed approach in protecting the Ravana River. Sediment is our biggest problem in the area. We have some really great ordinances in place. We also have some wonderful words in the comprehensive plan about protecting our watershed. However, we don't always do as good a job as we could in enforcing those ordinances. I do think that one of the best things we've done is to downzone the watershed in the early 80s, I guess it was 1980, which has done an awful lot to protect our watershed and our water sources. And I would just continue on a lot of the efforts that we've already put in place to put buffers, establish buffers, and look at our land use carefully to make sure we're protecting it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. C.
Again, taking the leadership role. Take the lead in whether it's education or enforcement to promote greater awareness of what happens upstream, offshores, and how this protects our basic necessity of life.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
Well, one thing that I learned in planning school was that way back before roads were prominent and it was the nation's mission to build every interstate it could, the waterways were the economic source. They were the economic connection to resources and the world. And cities didn't crop up in the middle of nowhere. They cropped up along waterways. But, we've kind of shifted from that, but it still provides an economic benefit. It adds to our aesthetics. It adds to our recreation value, the tourism, all of that. So, it's a matter of that the Ravana defines our community, and we just need to, like Philip said, embrace that.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
Well, one of the greatest things that we've done is renovate our wastewater treatment plant, our septic treatment plant. For years, it was behind what it should be. Now, since the plant has been renovated, a multi-million-dollar project, wastewater coming out of that is released into the streams, and they tell me that the water coming out of the treatment plant is almost clean enough to drink. Now, I'm not about to drink it, but I understand that by doing that, we have really cleaned up a lot of the pollution that we were contributing to the Rivanna River. One of the other problems is that the Rivanna River runs through the city, and they've got their own problems that they have not dealt with, and we're working with our stream as it comes before it gets to the city with the buffers and the erosion control and things such as that.
Thank you. Now for our final, not our final question. Never mind. We still have time for more. All right. Our next question from the audience. I'm sorry? He started. Yes. Would you support including in the comprehensive plan of Albemarle County an estimate of the right, optimal, or sustainable population size for our community? And we'll begin with Ms. Burkett.
So you're asking whether or not I would support
including in the comprehensive plan an estimate of the right, optimal, or sustainable population size.
I'm not sure that I could support an estimate that would have a cap that would forbid a growth rate. However, that doesn't mean that any decisions that are being made shouldn't keep population control in some regard. But no, I can say that I don't think that I could do that. When you're doing comprehensive plans, the idea that you should limit the growth seems short-sighted to me. I think I would rather talk about economic vitality and growth, doing growth in growth areas, and maintaining a strict code of environmental protection.
Thank you. Ms. Dittmar.
Start with a short story. I met Jack Marshall years ago, and we were always showing up at the same meetings, and finally one day we decided we should get to know each other a little better, and he came over to my office, and he was talking about limiting population growth, and zero population growth, and I said, Jack, I got to stop you right here, and I'll tell you why. I have four kids, and my husband has two. Together we've raised six, so I don't see any role of government in doing anything with regard to the number of children we have.
All right, Ms. McKeel, on whether or not the comprehensive plan should include an estimate of the right, optimal, or sustainable population size for the community.
No, I don't think it should. Now, having said that, I think that to have a number to look at makes for an interesting discussion. And I know we had a few years ago a study that the Board of Supervisors supported that looked at what a number would look like. Okay, I won't say that all of you supported it, Rodney. But I do think that more information sometimes is helpful. I agree with Jane in that I would not be interested in an absolute number. But I think if you're looking at your community, sometimes it's nice to have a number that you can say, well, if we were here, where would we be? So I would use it more as an information tool, but certainly not a limit or an absolute or a final number.
Thank you. Ms. Palmer.
I would not support a finite number in the comprehensive plan. I would be curious to know, though, how we could look at density. At what point density becomes unsustainable? At what, at what density is sustainable? I'm interested in that. I'm not quite sure it should be in a comprehensive plan, but I would very much like to understand what effects that would have on our land and our natural resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. C.
No. It limits your potential, your probabilities, and your possibilities.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
Well, I'm going to go back to my planning roots here and talk that, we live in a state that pretty much dictates law down to localities. It's enabling legislation. And based on the Virginia law, we're required to use a third-party source to project out where our growth is and then define in our comprehensive plan how we accommodate that growth, regardless of whether we want to or not. But the reality is locally that as we encourage more growth, the government, the county government, has a responsibility to provide resources and services to that new growth. So when we do that, it's I think, conceivable to set thresholds of certain expectations that if, like in the Rio District over the last 3 years, we probably had more than 1,000 new homes built. You know, how many more kids is that going to add to our school system? How many more police officers do we need? There are these thresholds of responsibility that the county has. So while we're talking about population, you know, limitations or expectations, we also have to talk about what kind of expectations we have for our county government at the same time.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
No, I would not support that either. And it looks like Jane is causing most of the problem.
Didn't you have more than that?
Well, a few more. You know, looking at the growth rate, and we talked earlier about 29% of our growth in this area is coming from the our children and our grandchildren. And I would no way in the world support that we get to the point that where we tell our children and grandchildren they've got to move until somebody dies. And then at that point, we might have an opening for them. So I'm 100% against that. And then, you know, another thing that we can do is, you know, we've got to provide jobs for these people, and that comes through economic development. And so as we go forward with economic development, we have as part of our plan to have companies come into this area that can provide jobs without bringing a lot of people with them so that, that they have jobs. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
You're a hard taskmaster.
Oh, and Dwayne stole my thunder. My grandkids would probably have to move out of the county also, but no, I would not.
Thank you. All right, we'll begin this next question with Ms. Dittmar. What do you see as the best sources of information on environmental issues? How do you value science versus environmental groups versus public opinion when making environmental decisions?
Well, I value all three. So let's talk about gathering facts to make decisions. You start with what you know, or you test with what you know. We've got unbelievable ability to get on the Internet now and fill in holes and describe what acronyms mean and find out when acts were passed. Diantha's mentioned the vast resource here at the university, which we are only beginning to tap into. But I'd want to hear what the scientists say. I'd like to hear if there were scientists that disagreed. I would also enjoy very much the opinions of the people that are also absorbing these facts. You can learn a lot by talking to people, and we have a very educated group of people in the county. So I think I value all three, and I, depending on the issue, would find weight with one or another, possibly more than another.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel.
I would value all three as well. I've talked about and have asked a group of people to be on a common ground council based on their expertise in different areas, and that would be one place to start. Some of them are university people, some of them are local folks, but certainly you need to get your information from a wide variety of places. And I think the Internet certainly is a great source of information, but we really have to be careful when we go to the Internet these days, because I can't tell you how many patients I have that try and diagnose themselves over the Internet, and it is a real problem and very concerning. So, but I do agree that all three would be the way to go, and bringing in a wide variety of community people, too. This would be a great way.
Thank you. Ms. Palmer.
I would value all three also. It's interesting because we've run into this problem a lot on some of the water issues where the science is there. It's very, very strong, but it doesn't necessarily apply to our specific situation. So that's when those other, when those other entities come in handy. So I would take all three. I definitely value science very highly, though.
Thank you. Mr. C.
Just as when I was a police officer investigating crimes, you have to look at all of the evidence that presents itself, the evidence that may not be there, and all three sources, you have to look at, you have to evaluate, and you have to weigh. So definitely.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
Well, definitely, you know, as was said, the Internet is full of sources of information, wide and abundant, and full of opinions. So definitely looking at all three different opinions and balancing those. You know, it's great that we live in a type of country where you can have three different opinions. You can have three different individuals standing in front of you, arguing their points of view, and still try to come to an agreement. And I think that's what it's important to understand, is that when you're looking for information, you're also looking for opinions. You're also looking for perspectives, because reality is the perspective of that individual. So, you know, it's a balancing act, and I think that's the role of a supervisor as well, is to take that information and try to filter it through.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
I firmly support all three, and I want to give you an example. Here, I guess it's been close to a year and a half ago now, we had the issue on the table of chloramines in our water. And the decision had been made to go ahead and add chloramines to our water to help purify it and make it safe for everyone to drink. The issue started coming up that this was not the right thing to do. And this place was absolutely packed with people saying that, and it was going back and forth on the Internet and the news, and we had expert against expert. And the more that you looked into it, the more that you could see chloramines was not a good thing. And there again, based on all the different inputs that we had, and I made the recommendation that night that we take chloramines off the table and that we go with the activated charcoal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Well, the EPA has been very helpful to me over the years. The state agencies have. Sometimes state agencies don't have all the answers. Where I have gotten most all of my answers is from the Elmore County staff. We have a really good staff, and there are a lot of help. So that's the three that I've gotten mine from.
Thank you. Ms. Burkett.
Well, I'm in agreement with the rest. All three are obviously have their value. Science certainly helps us interpret the information that is out there. But we have to have our local environmental groups and the EPA to interpret those things for us locally. So we need all facets and all manner of explanations of so that we can take all the information and make it work for Albemarle County.
Thank you. And we'll have one final question here before we wrap up. What would you say is your top environmental priority? We will begin with Ms. McKeel.
Well, my top priority right now is working through our stormwater situation that's coming down with the mandate that's really on top of us pretty quickly. I think that's going to need some fast attention, although it's obvious that we need a lot more information. But the stormwater issue, as well as cleaning up our waterways. Then my other priority you didn't want to, did you? Well, I have time. My other priority really is making sure that we practice we have environmentally friendly practices at the same time that we recognize that we can also have economic prosperity and development, and that they're not mutually exclusive. I think
that's
critical.
Ms. Palmer.
I'm a water and sewer woman, so protecting the watershed, because when you protect the watershed, you really protect the whole county. That takes into consideration the storm water. It takes into consideration land use, soils, so comprehensive look at trying to protect the watershed is where my priorities are. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. C.
Stormwater runoff, because we're not the only players in this game. We're going to have to deal with the feds. We're going to have to deal with state. So taking the lead on that and what comes down to us and trying to make it work.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
Getting back to measuring how energy inefficient we are, In 2011, we stopped doing that. I think we stopped understanding what the economic benefits would be for trying to be a little bit more energy conscious. And I'll take Diantha's lead there and say I have a second, and that's the built environment. I live in the neighborhood model, kind of a new urbanist type model neighborhood, and we look at things like the built environment, the way it impacts our energy usage and our environmental impact. And so I think we need to, a priority of mine is taking a look at the way we are helping out with the built environment and the leads that we're getting from what we're seeing as far as the results.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
Well, I have to go along with the majority. The clean water and our streams and everything is going to be by far the most important thing we've got to deal with in the next few years. It's getting ready to, with the new mandates that are coming down, literally to cost us millions of dollars, and it's going to be a priority across the board. And if we don't meet the guidelines that they put out, then we could be in serious trouble as far as fines and things such as that. So right now, clean water is at the top of the list.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Well, I guess I'm ditto, but it's clean water has always been a thing for me. Also, the watershed, since I was on RRBC, I just really have gotten interested in that part of it. Stream buffers. Stream buffers are a very important part of all of this. So.
All right. Thank you.
I would also agree. I think stormwater management is going to be the immediate priority of the board in the next couple of years. It is one of those issues that it dovetails into a lot of issues, including, our own streams and buffers, way of mitigating pollution. And it's just going to be a very comprehensive way of dealing with clean water.
Thank you. And Ms. Dittmar.
I'm going to look at this in a slightly different way, and that is playing off the word important. I think we all in our homes and in our organizations deal with urgent versus important. And what I've heard are some very urgent things that we need to address environmentally. The most important thing to me, and I think if we paid attention to it, it would actually help with many of our environmental issues, is protecting the rural area and making sure that designated growth stays confined in areas where we can provide infrastructure for it. So if we take care of our rural area, it will help take care of our air, our water, and other things.
Thank you. We'll now allow 1 minute for each of the candidates to give a short closing, and we'll begin with Ms. Palmer.
Okay. In closing, I'd like everybody in my district to vote for me. Since it's an environmental forum, I'll concentrate on that, though. I have a very strong environmental background in natural resource protection. I have worked for this county for 15 years trying to promote natural resource protection, especially in the protection of rivers and land use issues. I'm very interested in open government. I will pledge if I get elected that I will listen to everyone and try to include as many people as possible. I will not make unplanned decisions on this board, unscheduled decisions on this board, and I will be inclusive. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. C.
Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this. Thank you for attending this very important discussion. Just as everyone here, I am committed to clean air, water, preserving, and being a steward of the land. I also understand the realities of human needs. I know we can work together. Everybody remember that poster of the earth? It says, "Love your mother." I look forward to continuing this discussion and working together on our environmental issues. Talking with each other and not at each other is going to solve our problems. And your vote is most appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sheffield.
As you can tell, there's definitely a diverse perspective on a lot of issues, and I appreciate the opportunity to give you a glimpse into what my position and ideas are for serving as a supervisor. I believe I bring a lot of energy and enthusiasm and a very unique perspective as a transportation and land use planner to the Board of Supervisors, and I think that I can help us as a community build consensus and kind of build a future together. And don't forget to vote for me.
Thank you. Mr. Snow.
Again, I'd like to thank everyone that has made this possible tonight. As you can tell by my answers to your questions tonight, I am a strong advocate for our county's environmental needs. For us to be able to accomplish what we need in order to protect our environment, we need to have members on the board who can successfully work with members of different political parties and persuasions. I have a record of accomplishments that come about as a result of being able to work with those of different opinions. I have earned the support of both Democrats and Independents. On my recent campaign finance report, you will see that Democrat Albemarle County Commonwealth Attorney Denise Lunsford made a very generous contribution to my campaign. She did this because she knows I always put the citizens' interests ahead of partisan politics. We have made environmental and other important changes to our community. It will take a supervisor who is responsible to the citizens, able to work with all sides of complex issues, and I'm out of time, so vote for me on November 5th.
Mr. Thomas.
I'm a very communicative person. I stay in touch with everybody in Rio District as much as I possibly can. I have had 8 town hall meetings in the last 3.5 years. I've attended 24 HOA meetings, which is very informative. I mean, you usually get down to the nitty-gritty. My 3.5 years on the Board of Supervisors has been an enjoyable experience. A lot has been accomplished. The Economic Vitality Action Plan has proven to be something that the entire Board of Supervisors has supported. We are open for business. Transportation improvements have and are taking place. I have gotten a new Route 11 CAT bus on Rio Road, and sidewalks are coming, too, by the way. And then we got the northern part of Meadow Creek Parkway opened up for traffic, and Dominion Virginia Power has been really communicative with us and are opening up the lines, the right-of-ways for the lines, so that the electricity won't go off.
Thank you. Ms. Burkett.
First of all, thank you very much all for coming tonight. It was a pleasure to be here. I want you to know that environmental issues are paramount to the continued success of Albemarle County. I promote a working environment that encourages innovative thinking and citizen input. I can promise you integrity, honesty, transparency, along with hard work and determination to get the job done. And it would be an honor to serve. And if you could vote for me on November 5th, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Dittmar.
I add my thanks to the folks that spent this time with us and to the Sierra Club for sponsoring it. And, Jessica, you did a great job. I wanted to also thank everybody who's up here for all your good thinking, and there was some diversity in our thinking. When I teach conflict resolution skills to companies and organizations, I talk about the beauty of diversity, the creativeness of diversity, and how decisions are made better when we have that. It does take sometimes skill to mediate, to allow people to talk together, to come to good conclusions collaboratively. I have that skill, and I think I would look very forward to bringing that to the board or sharing that with the board in our decision-making. I, too, would like to ask for your vote if I resonated well with you tonight. And if you can't vote for me because you're not in the Scottsville district, if you know somebody, pick up the phone and call them and ask them to vote for me, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McKeel.
While there was we had a variety of opinions tonight, I found it fascinating as to how much we actually agreed on, which was really pretty wonderful. I think we need all the time to seek out that common ground that we agree on and see if we can't come together as a community. I would love to see our community work more closely as Charlottesville, Albemarle, and the University of Virginia, because we really are one group, and what we do in one area affects the other. But I do thank you again for coming. I thank the Sierra Club and everyone that was involved, and would love to have your vote. I have appreciated the support of the Jewett residents for the last 16 years, and ask for their vote again. And Jane had a great idea. If you know somebody, pick up the phone. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you again to all the co-sponsoring organizations, the candidates, and all of you for attending tonight. Remember that elections are held on November 5th, so make sure you get out and vote. If you're not registered or you know someone who's not registered at their current event or at their current address, the deadline for voter registration is October 15th. In addition to tonight's event, the Sierra Club Piedmont Group is co-sponsoring an event Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock at the Piedmont Virginia Community College on how power purchase agreements can be used by churches and nonprofits to install solar panels. Additionally, we will have a table at the Vegetarian Festival on Saturday from 11 to 5 in Lee Park. The Sierra Club's next meeting is on October 16th in St. Mark's Church, and one of our co-sponsors, Better World Betty, will be presenting that evening. For updates on future Sierra Club events and news, please sign up for our listserv on the clipboards that have been circulating. Please remember to return the pens on the way out. And thank you all for your attention and participation.